So welcome back, everyone, for a short and sharp edition of the Complexity Premier podcast. It's Chris Joy. I'm a portfolio manager at Coolabah Capital. We are an absolute return fixed income manager. And I'm joined by my esteemed colleague and portfolio management director, Yingyi Ancheng. Yingyi, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So Yingyi, what should we talk about?
Well, Chris, Aussie insolvencies hit a record high in March, according to the latest data released by the corporate regulator. And so in total, in the month of March, 1,131 businesses went bust. And that was the largest number since ASIC started collecting these statistics in 1999. So it seems that intensifying labor and input costs are a killer for these companies with little pricing power.
Yeah, Yingyi, that's right. So when we seasonally adjust that data, we get exactly the same result. So it's not just a seasonal anomaly. In fact, corporate failures in Australia have hit a 25-year high, despite the fact that the economy continues to expand. And we've maintained incredibly low, circa 3.9% unemployment rate based on the latest data through to March. Now, Yingyi, this news also runs completely counter to the spin and rhetoric we see emanating out of the media, apropos the claim that corporate defaults are totally benign. And Yingyi, we know that globally, corporate defaults in the first 2 months of this year were the worst since the dark days of the global financial crisis in 2009. I think in the year to March, it's ranking as one of the worst years since 2009, based on S&P's data. And certainly defaults in Europe are the worst they've seen since 2008. Regular readers would know that one of Coolabah's central theses has been that this default cycle will be the worst since the GFC globally and the most severe in Australia since the 1991 recession. But this time around, in our view, it will mainly impact unregulated non-bank lenders and private credit portfolios due to the fact that regulators have forced most subprime borrowers out of the regulated banking system into the arms of non-banks following the last crisis. And of course, those non-banks have been desperately searching for yield, which was appropriate when cash rates were zero, but obviously is highly inappropriate today, given we can get incredibly attractive risk-free yield vis-a-vis 4 to 5% cash rate and term deposit rates in the fives. Finally, I think this data really signals in as that we have a two-speed economy. While most firms are in very good health, those that predicated their business models on the ongoing availability of cheap money and the sustenance of very low interest rates are surely getting slowly asphyxiated by that high cost of capital. And obviously, we don't see that relenting anytime soon.
Yes, CJ. And look, we're seeing the same dynamics emerge in the household sector. So while banks are reporting only a modest bump in home loan arrears, our tracking at Coolabah of securitized home loans issued by non-banks has actually highlighted a striking increase in defaults to historically elevated levels. And frankly speaking, these dynamics, as we know, are only going to deteriorate over this year, particularly as the RBA struggles to reduce interest rates in the face of re-accelerating core inflation, which is being driven by intense cost pressures in the services sector, which is being fueled by unsustainably strong wage growth, which in itself is an artifact of our very tight labour market, Chris. Would you agree?
Yeah, Yingyi, it's definitely hard to disagree with that data. Our very low unemployment rate, south of 4 percentage points, is well below long-term historical averages around the mid-fives, and also conspicuously below the RBA's estimate of full employment, also known as the NIRU, or the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment, while the RBA's target policy rate of 4.35% is 65 to 115 basis points below key peers, like New Zealand, where it's 5.5%, Britain, where it's 5.25%, America, where it's 5.25% to 5.5%, and Canada, where it's 5%. So one of Coolabah's core forecasts right now is for global stagflation. This has been a long-held view. That is core inflation remaining above central bank targets, coinciding with deteriorating economic growth. And Yingyi, for all the stock jockeys' talk of so-called soft landings, in our view, this cycle is not remotely over. We would also submit that the canary in the coal mine is the characteristically prescient New Zealand Central Bank, the RBNZ, which began lifting interest rates in October 2021, way ahead of most of its developed world contemporaries. And New Zealand's Q1 inflation data for 2024, which was published last week, revealed an increasingly familiar yet profoundly problematic fissure. And that is temporarily weakening goods price pressures, so goods deflation, coupled with accelerating services inflation, which is keeping overall core inflation at completely unpalatable levels. With escalating oil prices and freight costs, given geopolitical conflicts overseas, undermining future goods price disinflation, which has been a key premise of the Fed's dovish pivot from late last year, Yingers, I think the outlook is very worrying indeed.
Yeah, Chris, not great. Well, on our seasonal adjustment, New Zealand's goods price inflation continued to slow to about 1.5% in the first quarter, down from its 10% pandemic peak. And at the same time, much more persistent and hence important services inflation picked up to circa 6.5%. So this resulted in core or trimmed mean inflation expanding by a robust 0.8% in the March quarter after a 0.7% gain at the end of 2023. And the RBNZ's preferred sector factor model pointed to similar dynamics, with inflation of 4.3% in the first quarter, more than double its 2% target. So the tension between weak goods prices and sticky services inflation is also echoed in the split of the sectoral factor model estimates, with lower core tradable annual inflation of 1.7%, contrasting sharply with still high non-tradable inflation of 5.2%. So the Kiwi economy has contracted almost continuously since late 2022, while unemployment has picked up from 3.2% to 4%. But unless the sectoral inflation estimates show something materially different, the RBNZ will find it hard to cut rates later this year.
Yeah, those points are well made, Yingers, and I think that really echoes the challenge faced by many central banks. Market pricing for the first cuts from the US Federal Reserve has been pushed out from March this year to sometime between September and October. And this has been triggered by re-accelerating US core inflation powered by stubborn core services price pressures, which are now climbing at an unacceptably high 6.5% annual pace. Here, Yingers, it's important to remember that when the Fed was hitting its 2% inflation target before the pandemic, core services inflation was running at about 3%, or less than half its current pace. And our analysis of the monthly inflation data in Australia hints at similar issues. Simply stated, Yingers, the US economy has failed to normalize as the Fed hoped, because the unemployment rate of 3.8% is just too low, wage growth is too strong, and fiscal policy is too stimulatory, with a gigantic budget deficit of 6 to 7% of GDP being bequeathed by Biden. We think this situation, Yingers, was really exacerbated by the Fed foolishly deciding to ease financial conditions late last year via its dovish pivot, which crushed the global cost of both equity and debt capital. And yet, the belated realization that this inflation cycle is not over has forced the US 10-year government bond yield up from 3.8% at the start of the year to almost 4.7% at the time of this recording, which has precipitated a 5.7% capitulation in US equity prices as measured by the S&P 500 from their recent highs. It is, however, disconcerting, Yingers, that US equities remain an extraordinary 21 percentage points above their mark in October last year, when the US 10-year government bond yield was at 5%, which is where it may still return. There therefore remains tremendous downside risk for asset prices, previously buoyed by the presumption that financing costs were in structural decline. In our view, this presents challenges for portfolios exposed to any cyclically sensitive sectors and/or riskier borrowers that have higher probabilities of defaulting on their debts in an environment characterized by elevated interest rates. Investors should also reflect on the fact that most Aussie corporate defaults right now are being driven by problems in commercial real estate, residential property development, construction, retail, and hospitality. And it's precisely these sectors that dominate the portfolios of non-bank lenders servicing subprime borrowers that struggle to obtain finance from conventional banks, where those conventional banks obviously have little appetite for lending money to individuals and/or entities that find it hard to service their debts.
Yeah, Chris. Look, APRA's research has consistently shown that commercial real estate and resi development exposures are the most likely drivers of bank failures, as we saw in the 1991 recession. And hence, APRA has strongly discouraged the ADIs from accumulating credit concentrations in these areas for that precise reason.
Yeah, Inga, some listeners might be too young to remember this, but the 1991 recession almost claimed the scalps of both ANZ and Westpac, two of our biggest banks, because of their exposures to commercial real estate and residential developers. And it feels like investors who are still searching for yield haven't learned any of these lessons, at least judging from the historically very tight or expensive credit spreads that we see on private credit and high yield debt securities. In terms of what investors should be focusing on, Yingers, we're really concentrating on the next few inflation, wages, employment, and GDP prints. And I think they'll have a deterministic influence on whether we stay in the current regime, where the US 10-year government bond yield has jumped from 3.8% in January up to almost 4.7% right now, or whether we hit a new regime where it pushes through 5%, and heaven forbid, those long equity risk and other, pro-cyclical sectors. But if markets start pricing in the possibility of the Fed actually lifting rates further. Yingers, I think we'll put a line under this short and punchy podcast episode at that juncture. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Hopefully, that was helpful. And we look forward to engaging with you again very soon.
This podcast does not provide financial advice. It is not an invitation to invest in any financial product, and the information in it should not be relied on for any decisions. All views expressed represent the personal opinions of the speaker and do not represent the view of any other party. If this recording contains reference to any financial products, that reference does not constitute advice or a recommendation and should not be relied upon. Listeners in Australia are encouraged to visit the moneysmart.gov.au website to obtain information regarding financial advice and investments.